podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Alethea Glaive. Alethea is a licensed clinical social worker in the state of New York. She works with Mark Graham and his Coordinated Behavioral Care Innovative Pathway Home Program, an evidence-based critical time intervention program that effectively transitions individuals with serious mental health issues from intensive behavioral health settings back into the community. In addition to her work with Pathways Home, Alethea runs Melanated Counseling, a private therapy practice in New York City aimed at working with historically underserved communities of color. While Melanated Counseling is an all-inclusive practice, it was particularly formed to support Black mental health and other melanated communities. Alethea has worked with a wide range of issues from depression and anxiety to family and partner relationships with a dedication to reaching Black and other communities of color in an effort to normalize and decolonize therapy. Alethea, it is so nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks for having me again, Graham. Good to be here.
Great to have you here. You know, I'm excited to talk with you today about your work and specifically your targeted focus in addressing mental health in underserved and underrepresented communities. And as we start out, set the framework for us. What constitutes or defines what we refer to as an underserved or an underrepresented community?
Sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone knows this, but for those of you who don't, you know, whenever there's an inability to access or there's less money involved, whether it's what you earn or generational, things of that nature, it makes it a little bit harder to engage in some of the things that people who have those can do freely and regularly.
Really good. You know, I know your therapeutic endeavors take you on a wide range of various settings, from being on the street and in people's homes that way back into your clinic. And I'm curious, in your clinic, as you work with folks and they're coming in to see you in the Melanated Counseling that you guys provide, by the way, folks, you guys got to check out their website. It is a phenomenal website. It is so beautiful and so nicely laid out. So that's a little plug for that website, but I had a great time going through it. But as we look at primary needs within these communities that you're focusing on and serving and the folks living in them, give us an understanding of the unique circumstances of the adults that you're working with and what you've come to appreciate about them and their distinct needs.
Yeah, I'd say for a lot of the folks that come to see me, they feel like this is the definition of what a true safe space is. And so a lot of times people feel like they need to and want to go to therapy, but because they don't always get connected with someone who understands what they're going through, it's harder to build that trust. It's harder to share things. It's harder to be vulnerable because the spaces are typically designed to be unsafe. And so how can I trust and be vulnerable in a space that's not designed for me?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm seeing with a lot of the people that come to see me. Even just from consults, I've gotten quite a few folks to say, I'm actually trying to leave my therapist. That's one of the things I've heard a lot. And just, I just need someone that looks like me and that will understand me. And that was kind of the driving force to setting this whole thing up.
I really like that. When we look at Ericksonian stages of development, we know the very first stage is trust versus mistrust. And that's when we first come into the world, let alone when we come into relationship with each other for the very first time. It is nothing elaborate. It's about trust versus mistrust. It's the most fundamental thing we can have.
Right.
From there, you know, confidentiality and privacy and all those things. But you're talking about that safe space. It is everything, isn't it? And for a lot of folks, that therapy with you may be the safest place in their whole lives.
Right. Right. We have folks that are used to being the only person that looks like them in a lot of spaces in their life. And when they come here, they don't have to worry about that. And they know that they can talk about that. Because that's another thing that people struggle with, you know, going to other therapists. I've heard a lot of people say, I don't feel like having to educate my therapist on what I'm going through. And that is a big deal for a lot of people.
That idea that somehow there's a shared knowing from the very beginning that they don't have to do a lot of, you know, preface type work with and kind of bringing somebody up to speed. There's just a sense of knowing and sharing that I get to come in and now I get to see you just easily dip down into why I'm here without that preliminary work. Maybe kind of going into that a wee bit, in my introduction, I had addressed your work being intentionally focused on normalizing and decolonizing therapy. And when we think about just decolonization in general and how it tends to be referenced, we tend to look at, you know, the idea of restorative justice through cultural and economic freedom, but you're looking at it through a therapist's eyes, which is very unique. And while you're aware, I know, and sensitive to the cultural and economic factors, explain to me the psychological perspective you bring to decolonizing therapy and the work that you do to help people understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to put it in terms that folks out there would understand, I think it's a mixture for me personally of like cross-cultural and humanistic, because I'm a very big believer in putting the person first. And like, you know, in social work school, you learn about personal environment and looking at people where they are, and those things seem like terms, but when you're in front of someone, you have to look at it from the lens that they're coming from. And so when we talk about, for example, racial trauma, that's not something that you can kind of just tick off on your psychosocial assessment and move on. Like it is a part of their life, and it's a part of who they are, it's a part of the experience and the trauma that they go through. And so it's not something you can just walk over.
No.
It's woven in.
It is woven in. And sometimes I notice those things. We'll talk about this maybe a little bit later as well, but sometimes those things get woven in and it becomes part of their fabric, and it's kind of an unconscious component of it, but it can be a very impactful and driving component, you know, to people's lives. And I'm imagining that sometimes part of your work is helping them kind of pan out a wee bit and to appreciate some of the things in their fabric that are really at play. Can take me to that just a wee bit there. I think there's an appreciative piece here.
Yeah, I think sometimes I'll have folks that will even gloss over some of the traumatic experiences that they've had or something that happened at work this week, because that's what they're used to. Everyone else is doing that. And so sometimes it's like, you know, I'm so used to struggling and having to be resilient that it becomes just a part of me, and I don't realize the damage that it's doing. And so sometimes I'll have to pick out from what someone's saying and go back and say, did you notice it said this? Or do you notice this type of theme? And then they'll stop and they'll think and they go,
that's good. That's right. Really good.
We can get into a deeper conversation. Sometimes I tell people, if you're not ready for that, that's okay. But I want you to know that I've noticed, and I'm here to talk about it whenever you're ready, and I'll challenge you. I'll bring it up again. I'm not going to forget about it. And so things like that, I tend to kind of stick to, particularly, you know, 2021 last year was just
upside down,
as you know. And I think for a lot of people of color, yes, there was almost like this awakening in America. But for us, it was more like racism didn't just come out this year. So why is everyone acting like it's something new, you know? And so having to talk through that with folks, like, I've been experiencing this forever, and now all of a sudden people are noticing, you know, you have to kind of go through it again. And that's hard.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about the fabric that we have. Sometimes we don't know what we don't know of what we're living in. It's just our normal, and we do what we know, and do we know how to do better? So as therapists, you know, we're often, as part of our work, we have an opportunity to educate people, which you're describing right now, about some of the realities that are impacting their lives that may not even be aware of. That's the fabric component you're talking about. And as I've read about you, and as I've interviewed you before, and one of the reasons I had you back on the show is I know you love to challenge the conscious and unconscious aspects of racism, and you're willing and you're encouraging folks to have the harder conversations around uncomfortable topics that can be so helpful to understanding oneself and to assisting with a healing and freeing oneself to kind of reach the fullest potential. How are you helping folks frame that may not be aware of it, but you're noticing certain things, you begin to kind of label it, name it. How are you framing racism and its impact on those coming to see you?
I say it. I think for too long, we operate from, how do I say this in the right way and all those things. And I think that kind of just contributes to the problem. A lot of times people just won't name what something is. I don't have a problem with that. So don't have any specific thing.
Give me an example.
give you an example. Okay, so
I don't have a problem just stepping out and naming it. Give me an example. Yeah,
so like, okay, I was talking with a client about work, and what she was on a particular project at work, and there was a white person that she was consulting with, and this person went around her to her boss because she was not happy with the answer that my client was giving her.
Yeah.
About the project, it was something that everyone knew what was happening, and you know, we were going down the line, and yeah, everyone knew what was supposed to happen from A to Z. But because she challenged something and the white client didn't like it, she went around her to her boss, and she was just talking through this like it was normal. And
right.
So I brought up microaggressions, and
yes,
specifically talking about what that incident did to her, how it made her feel. And then she's like, oh, this is corporate. Like, that's just
right,
the way things are. And it's like,
right,
that's not how they're supposed to be.
And that's so right.
Let's talk about how you can, you know, knowing that this is the environment you're in, how you can protect yourself, you know, how you can protect your mental health in a yeah, situation like that. And so that's like a small example of how I do it. I just don't like to just let things go, let things slide, or like,
sure,
frame it in random. It's like, that's a form of racism. Like, you went to my white boss because you didn't like what I, this black woman, was telling you. And then when the white man told you the exact same thing, then it was fine. So, you know, it's just, and that's something you see a lot. Like, I've seen yeah, that at work too, but, you know, you have to say something. You can't let everything slide.
I really like that. You know, we do that every day in our work, just in general, with the broad range of populations that we might see, where they're talking about their family of origin, and they would talk about, yeah, we used to get beaten, you know, with a mm-hmm, the pull cue, and you know, we used to, you know, be made to stand in the corner, you know, and whatever it may be, in certain ways that were, you know, difficult and abusive, and they're talking about it like they're just, you know, talking about it, and you kind of go, wait a minute, you recognize that's abuse, right? And they go, what are you talking about? Because most of the times their society or their community around them might have some similar things, or they just have that experience in their own lives. And that's their normal. That's their paradigm. And so as therapists, we begin to kind of work and say, you recognize what that is. And so that in that education process, they begin to recognize that that was not a normal way of being. And in fact, the behaviors that come out of that to survive that actually may be some of the very things that are getting them stuck right now in their lives. Mm-hmm. What you're adding is how race and color have another layer of this on this. It's not just, you know, what you grew up with in your family, what you're going through and, you know, friendships, et cetera. It's your color has a role in this too.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a tagline on my site that says your melanin matters. And I put that there specifically because it absolutely does. You know, you have people out there like, I don't see color. And like, I hate when people say that, because mm-hmm, how can you not? It is yeah, a part of who someone is and what they've experienced and who they will be. And it shapes their thinking of themselves and the way people treat them. And so you can't say, I don't see color, because
yeah,
it's there.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Are you preparing for a licensure exam in psychology, social work, marriage and family therapy, counseling, or behavioral analysis? AATBS is here to help. We have been supporting behavioral mental health students to prepare for their licensure exams for more than 45 years, working with over 1 million students to succeed on test day and move on to the next step in their career. With products ranging from comprehensive courses to quiz banks and delivered live online, self-study online, and in print, AATBS has test prep solutions that meet every student's needs and learning styles. Visit us today at aatbs.com. That's aatbs.com, and use promo code BHT15 to save 15% off your next purchase.
Well, here's the other side of that coin. You as a therapist are intentionally and gently and benevolently, therapeutically poking at this part for them to help them realize that there are the other dimensions that might be part of their mental health mm-hmm, that you really want them to address and embrace and empower. But you're talking about this all the time. In my work with trauma, and we had Guy McPherson on our show just recently, the Trauma Therapist Project. And we're talking about how as therapists, we need some really good self-care, because we're talking about sitting with and immersing ourselves in people's lives that are oftentimes very traumatic. Yeah. And here you are. The important thing is you need to raise these issues because they need to see them in ways they may not see them. But at the same time, you're rehashing it and rehashing it and talking about it and pulling it out. Mm-hmm. What's that like on you just to kind of hold some of that?
Hold in space for people. And especially when it comes to this, you know, it gets traumatizing and re-traumatizing depending on what you hear. It brings up stuff for you. And, you know, we talk about transference and things of that nature and self-disclosure. And for me, I feel like that's a very Eurocentric thought process. Like, don't share anything with your clients. I don't agree, especially when it comes to this, because if I have something in my life that I've gone through that I know can help you through this, or like you can see it from my perspective or just understand it from a different way, I'm going to share that with you. I see it similarly to how peer specialists are in our field. Like, they have lived experience and they share that. So why is it okay that they do that, but then I'm going to sit here knowing full and well what you're going through and just pretend like I don't?
So while the therapy doesn't become, you know, influenced, it's not your therapy. What you're saying is your history as a Black woman and your education in this field has a unique perspective to bring that can convey, I get this, and here's what I'm seeing, here's what I'm understanding. Now tell me more about your experience.
Right. Yeah. Because obviously there are boundaries, but like something like that, we are sharing that. Like when there was something going on in our communities last year, and it was like, we collectively need group therapy. Like, people were saying that, like, as a people. And so we have shared experiences. I'm going to talk about it. And then if something really comes up for me, I have a therapist as well. And I share that with her when I see her every other week.
You know, I've been thinking about this, again, a little bit of a tangent, but you're sparking my memory, is this idea that with all that's going on right now and a lot of things being upside down and divisive and everything else, I believe psychologists, knowing what we know about individuals, about groups, about our identities, and what we know about healing, I think we are in a really unique place to help our communities immediately, our cities and our nation to heal in some really unique ways. I'm curious about your, I know it's a little impromptu, but I'm curious about your thoughts about psychology's role, mental health's role, the expertise that we have in helping our folks heal and coming together.
Yes. So I think for that, I think history is important because I think people need to recognize and remember that a lot of the issues that we have in this field are born from systemic issues, colonization. Like they are that. They weren't created for my people or to help my people. And so people need to go into whatever theories they're using and all that and acknowledge where it's coming from. That's the that's the first thing that people have to do. Like, you can't just, let's try and fix it. But I also think there is a difference between healing, like you're saying, and treatment. And I think a lot of times people don't understand the difference. You know, we come up with a treatment plan to try and help someone and fix it. If you look at everything from a lens of treatment, it's going to be much harder to help someone heal.
Versus?
The treatment and the healing, right? So a treatment plan to me is not healing per se, especially if we're talking about like a racial lens. What are you going to put in your treatment plan to like cure someone's racial trauma? You know what I mean? That's not what this is about. And so I think people need to look within themselves and like the savior complex and on all of those things and put that to the side. When you want to say you want to come together and help people heal, I think learning about what people have gone through and trying your best to understand that, as opposed to it being a competency. You know, like we have phrases like cultural competency. I hate the phrase. It makes it sound like you can learn enough about something and master it to then help someone. And, you know, I use phrases like cultural awareness and humility versus cultural competency. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think we are people, you know, we're in a position to be able to help folks because of what we know. But I think we have to actually take a look at what we know to reformat it for people before we can just step into healing.
So once that contextual appreciation is developed, in a necessary way. That sets kind of the foundation from which to build things off of, a very necessary, and to put it in a right way, rightly set. From there, you're talking about then how do we heal? How do we come together? What does actually healing look like? So therapeutically, as you're empowering people to both create a greater self-awareness and understanding, then their steps to realize their greatest and fullest potential that they are designed to experience. Yeah. What are you seeing the healing look like in the individuals, and maybe in some of the small groups you might work with as well? Yeah. What's happening?
I'm seeing, so I have a set of principles. I call them my self-wealth principles. And wealth is basically an acronym. And it's wealth, esteem, awareness, love, tuning, and healing. And love so it. I go through that with folks and I see where there might be some issues or hesitation in each of those areas. What do I need to look at within myself and about myself? And what are things I need to address, tuning, you know, before I can get myself to the stage of healing? And I think when I go from it at that lens, I think it's easier for people to get in on the journey, because a lot of times, you know, you've sat in with folks and it's like, I just don't want to feel like this anymore. Or I just don't want this to be the case. And it's like, you can't skip the steps. And so I created my own set of steps, and it's the self.
I like that. That's really good. I know that change ultimately in our behavior, in our view of ourselves, you know, changing paradigms, changing things that we do. Mm-hmm. I know the change isn't easy, and letting go of our familiar or our known is often kind of difficult. Even if the alternative that we're working with folks and they can see, even if the alternative is clearly better, in terms of one's natural resistances to change and what you find being some of the biggest challenges to folks stepping into a life of, let's say, healthier thinking, feeling about themselves, a healthier, more valid self-identity, maybe even challenged within the community. What do you find being some of the biggest resistances and challenges to that growth?
I think people doing what they know, that stepping out of your comfort zone is really hard for a lot of people, especially if that's the way it's been for 30 years, 50 years. It makes it harder. I think a support system or lack thereof is also another challenge. And then I also have people who have this like superhero syndrome because they've always had to be that person.
Yeah.
It's like, when do I take time for myself and like work on me? And for me, I look at it and I'm like, come on, this is so simple, like in my head. But like, I know that it's not. It's really not. Like if I'm talking to someone who has a full-time job, is also trying to do school, is leading things at their church, has children that they have to come home and take care of, and all of these things, I'm starting a side business. Like I have people that are doing literally everything. And I'm like, what about you? And so we have conversations around the to-do list says the most.
Yeah.
So how do I cross that off? Yeah. I would say those are most of the challenges that I've seen, but they're all doable.
They are.
We can get through, and we just have to have that willingness and that openness.
You know, as I'm listening to this one, I'm thinking about how you find yourself being in the therapy. You know, I know as we come to understand our patients' histories and their core needs, and when we become aware of what they may need from us uniquely, in that relationship they come into therapy for, what they might need you to be, you know, in that therapeutic relationship, as you listen to their stories shared with you, what are some of the roles that you find yourself providing for those you're working with? In other words, what are they needing you to be for that work to be what they need to take away and kind of grow in the way they need to or can?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all come with the listening ear. That's part of the gig, the active listening. But I think after that, for me, challenging is a big one for me.
Yeah.
Because I can't sit and let things go, like I said before. And
I can see you lovingly getting people uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes. And I tell people that from day one, from the concept. Right. I said, if you are not looking for someone, I'm not the right person for you.
Person's down the hall.
In every single consult, I say this. And I have gotten, the response that I get mostly is, that's what I need. Yeah. And so most of the time, I have no problem playing that part. And so I've had people like come back to me in session and say like, I heard your voice in my head. Or I wasn't sure if I should tell you this because I knew you were going to gather me together. It makes me laugh because I'm like, yes, I need you to be aware that that's going to happen. But it's always done from a place of love, and obviously, you know, everyone has choice and all these things. And I'm never telling anyone to do. That's not what we do. But what I say to people is, I'm going to get you to look at this from all the angles and grown folks make grown people decisions.
Yes.
What you're going to do, if you're going to make a decision, it's going to be informed consent.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is. And so when I say that to people, they go, that makes sense. Like, I might do this still, but I'm going to know why I'm doing it.
Yeah. It goes back to what you talked about at the very beginning. If we can have that trust in the relationship together, and this is the safest place they can have, we can talk about anything. Yeah. We can work through, find a way, make a way through anything in someone's lives more times than not. And you're kind of inviting them to kind of get uncomfortable with you and letting you kind of poke and play, and but lovingly and benevolently so. I think it's a wonderful role to be able to take, kind of in that challenger, but also that holding, listening role as well. I'd be curious if you might have kind of just a story for us confidentially about someone you've worked with that you just see kind of coming in, and through that work and the things we're talking about thematically today, the racial piece involved in it. Give us a story.
I have someone right now, actually, that I'm still working with, but I found that she's doing the work and it makes me happy. She's someone that came to me because she said, I have an anniversary coming up of a trauma and I feel like I need to be in therapy before that anniversary comes up. And so
nice.
That doesn't immediately come up because, we're getting to know each other and she's informing me about her life. And then she starts telling me about some racial trauma that is not even the trauma that she wanted to discuss. And so particularly, like, she's an Asian person, and so, like, everything that was happening recently with the attacks, and she was saying she was afraid to go outside, and then also imposter syndrome, and, like, I don't know if I should be in this place at this time. And so we talked through a lot of that in conjunction with the other traumas that she experienced.
Nice.
She's also someone that's found herself in a lot of predominantly white spaces, and that was difficult for her.
Mm-hmm.
She's now come to the point where, jokingly, she's like, I need to stop hanging out with white people. I need to stop being around white people. We also discovered, like, most of her relationships have been, with white folks, and we had to talk through it. Like, why do you think that is? And that's something we're working through now, but I think she's really coming into, because she feels it's a safe space. She's even said to me, like, this is not even something that in my community we talk about like that, but I feel so comfortable with you.
Nice.
That I can really just get into why things are this way or how these things make me feel, and I'm not going to feel judged. And for me, that's the biggest part, like being able to be your authentic self and
be really real. Yeah, very real.
And I tell everyone that on the consult, like, how I'm talking to you now, Graham, is the same way I'm talking to my family. That's how I am in session. I don't like for people to feel like they're on the couch. That's not my style. You're going to get me. This is who I am in all spaces.
Yeah, really good. From your work, I know we're kind of coming home here, we're kind of winding down, but from your work and your experience, how can we as your colleagues work to, let's say, improve our own cultural awareness and our cultural humility in working with diverse populations?
Look at you learning, Graham. I just said it like 3 minutes ago. I think, just summarizing some of what we've said, I think taking a step back from the lens of treatment, I think, is one of the biggest things. And, like, understanding the history, in your profession, even, like, APA came out with their statement after however many years last year, apologizing for their role. You know what I mean? You have to really take a look at the system that you're in and whether or not you're perpetuating it. And then, talking to folks, listening, understanding, and coming from a place of humanity in every interaction.
I like that. Yeah. That's the heart of it, isn't it? We heal when we recognize that the humanity in all of us, and we find a way to love one another. That's where healing takes place.
Yeah.
We close our eyes. We don't see anything other than or feel the person in front of us. So I appreciate that part. I would love to have our listeners know the services that you're providing. Give us some resources here that they can get from our website, but also just give us a verbal one right here. Some resource, how to follow up with you, Melanated Counseling, and anything else we'd like to know about you, please.
Sure. For me, if you want to learn more about me and my work, you can go to melanatedcounseling.com. If you're more interested in what's happening with CBC, as we talked about in other sessions, that'd be cbcare.org. But for those of you who are looking for, specific services for BIPOC or just learning and growth, I would go to mhanational.org.
Good.
Or shout out to ShaunaMarieBrown.com. She's a wonderful thought leader, and she focuses a lot on community healing. She has decolonizing therapy for Black folk trainings and a host of other things. And so she's someone to watch and someone to know. So look out for her.
Really good. Alethea, it's always a joy to be with you. Thank you so much for the energy you bring and for the love you bring and just this big presence that I love being a part of. So thank you for joining us today.
Always, Graham. Good to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. And to those of you listening in today, we always appreciate you dropping by and including us in the podcast that you choose to listen to. We'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.